Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jemp and Luke Cutforth.
Hola.
Hi, howdy.
This week, we're talking about body dysmorphia. I don't want to do a pun this week, because...
That's just quite upsetting, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels a bit in poor taste. Yeah. But first, why don't we lighten the mood a little bit with an Apple review. So the title of this is in quotes. It says, "I was just reading my psychopathology book." It's got 5 stars, and it goes on to say, "Corey is that one scene in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone where Hermione goes and gets the book with Nicholas Flamel in it and says, 'I checked it out at the library weeks ago for some light reading.'"
Yes.
Yeah. I don't even know what episode that's a reference to, because...
No, that's every episode.
I've spoken about my psychopathology book a lot. Yeah.
And we're Harry and Ron.
So, moving on, I want to ask a question to everyone. So if you're listening on Apple or on Spotify or anywhere else, head over to YouTube, get down to the comments and answer this question. I want to know, what's your favorite feature? Like, what do you like about yourself?
Of yourself.
Right. We're going to do some positivity down in the comments. Give yourself a little compliment. Why don't you? But let's start the episode. So, body dysmorphia. I just want to start off with a question. What do you think body dysmorphia is? Body dysmorphia disorder or body dysmorphic disorder?
It's some kind of state of perceiving your self-image, your perception of yourself is incongruent with how you actually appear to other people.
Yeah, that's absolutely a part of it. Yes. But there's a little bit more to it, as with
usually it's in a negative way.
Yeah, well, so we'll get into it. So that is part of it, and that is the part that everyone knows, and the rest of it,
okay,
people don't know it, right? So let's get into this. The NHS say body dysmorphic disorder, BDD, or body dysmorphia is a mental health condition where a person spends a lot of time worrying about flaws in their appearance. These flaws are often unnoticeable to others. So this is something that I feel like people don't take into account. So it's kind of like OCD, right? And actually, if we look at the DSM-5 categorization of body dysmorphic disorder, it sits in a category of its own under obsessive compulsive and related disorders.
Ah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of similar to OCD in that people will be like, "I'm so OCD because I like things to be neat and tidy," or "I'm so OCD because I do things repetitively. I'll do this thing until it's done." They'll use OCD to mean a perfectionist or a clean freak or anything like that, right? And they leave out the fact that OCD isn't just being sort of like obsessive. Like, there's sort of, as we talked about in our OCD episode, you can have intrusive thoughts, you can cause harm to yourself with sort of like a sort of obsessive actions or compulsive actions. You know what I mean? Like, there's that whole aspect of it that is kind of just not thought about or not known about by a lot of the population. Whereas with body dysmorphic disorder, that's the part that isn't known, you know, the part that I just mentioned, wherein you spend a lot of time worrying about it. Like, that is a key part of body dysmorphia. And so many people will say, "Oh, my body dysmorphia going off," because they think they look ugly. But thinking you look ugly and having body dysmorphia are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
In the same sense as, I don't know, having an eating disorder and not really wanting to eat that one day are different things. You know, like, "Oh, I'm not feeling hungry today." That's not an eating disorder. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And thinking that you look ugly one day is not body dysmorphia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, even having a sort of warped self-image that's not body dysmorphia.
Yeah.
You know? So
it's one of those cases where it has to impede on your, what is it, your everyday life to some degree.
Yeah. There are a bunch of other diagnostic criteria. So we'll get into that in a sec. I want to just quickly talk about the history, because we don't usually talk about, you know, people don't usually know about where these things were sort of discovered or, you know, who spoke about them. So Enrico Morselli, who was an Italian psychiatrist, described BDD, body dysmorphic disorder, over 100 years ago. And here's a quote. He said, "The dysmorphophobic," which was the name for body dysmorphia at the time, dysmorphophobia. "So the dysmorphophobic, indeed, is a veritably unhappy individual who, in the midst of his daily affairs, in conversations, while reading at table, in fact, anywhere, at any hour of the day, is suddenly overcome by the fear of some deformity, which may reach a very painful intensity, even to the point of weeping and desperation." So other people then sort of studied some more and, you know, like described it in papers over in the past 100 or so years, and they used terms like dermatologic hypochondriasis, or my good god Schönheits hypochondrie, beauty hypochondria, Schön being the German, the Deutsch for beauty. I don't know, reading that German word is about as easy as reading any other science word. That's how difficult they are. They also described it as Hässlichkeitskummer, rare.
Oh yeah.
One who is worried about being ugly. Let me try that one again. Hässlichkeitskummer. Dearie me, that is a mouthful. I won't even spell it out because it'll take the whole length of the podcast. You can kind of get an idea. It's not just about having a warped self-image. It's about obsessively worrying about that warped self-image, right? And it's, I'm not saying that, hey, you think you have a warped self-image, you think you look ugly, you don't have body dysmorphia, you're fine, blah, blah, blah. That's a problem in and of itself, absolutely. Having a warped self-image, not liking how you look, those are problems that you should work on, you can deal with in some way. Body dysmorphia is not the same as those, in the same sense as, like, ADHD isn't just not being able to pay attention every now and then. You know, there are a lot of other things that come along with it, and being like, I'm so ADHD because you've gotten distracted or you've got lost in thought. It's a bit, you know, it's not, you kind of dilute the actual definition of those words when you do that. So how prevalent is body dysmorphia? What percentage of Americans, adults, do you think?
5%.
5%?
1 to 3%.
1 to 3%. 123%. Well done, Luke. Yeah, no.
everyone! Some people have it twice. And then some.
No, Luke, you're actually spot on there. So the point prevalence among US adults, which means that sort of any one point, like right now, not right now, but like, you know, if you pick a point,
right now,
2.4%. No. So when we talk about point prevalence, that's sort of in contrast to, I can't think of the term, but sort of longitudinal, a more longitudinal prevalence.
At any one point in time.
So for example, you could say that at any one point in time, 5% of people are depressed. However, you could also say that 100% of people are depressed over, you know, a much longer period of time. So like over a longer period of time, every single person goes through depression at some point.
Do they?
Just saying you could say this, right? So these are made up numbers. So these are made up numbers, right? A much easier way of doing this, right? Actually, something that's actually true. Forget the depression thing. Yeah. If you're depressed, forget it.
Whoa.
I'm giving out good advice. That's how you deal with depression.
It's gone.
That's science. No, okay. So, you know, let's say, it's gosh, like, I don't know, 14% of the population are kids, right?
Right.
So 14% of the population are children, but, you know, that's the point prevalence of being a child.
Yeah.
But if you were to look at the actual sort of the lifetime prevalence of being a child, it's 100%. You know, so the point prevalence means that at any one time, 2.4% of people will have body dysmorphia. And that could mean that, you know, let's say 5 to 10% of people over the course of their lives could have body dysmorphia. I don't have the exact numbers on that, but at any one point, about 2.4% of American adults have body dysmorphia. That's 2.5% in females and 2.2% in males. And outside the United States. I think this is for Germany, these numbers. 1.7 to 1.8 with a similar gender distribution to the US. But I'm going to break it down in some different groups here. So among dermatology patients, you've got 9 to 15%, 7 to 8% amongst US cosmetic surgery patients, 3 to 16% among international cosmetic surgery patients, and that's from most studies, and 8% among adult orthodontia patients. Orthodontistry is
teeth.
Mm-hmm. Well, specifically the sort of, like, you know, movement. So dentists are for like your teeth health. Orthodontists are for like braces and stuff, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And 10% amongst patients presenting for oral or maxillofacial surgery. What do you think maxillofacial is?
The outside of the face?
You will know what this sort of prefix maxillo means if you remember the episode we did on swallowing a shrew.
Just on that. I saw a dead shrew once, and I took a picture of it, and I was going to text you it and say, yum, yum, lunchtime. But I forgot to do it.
That's a good one.
Sorry. Anyway, maxillo.
I think it's the jawbone, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say cheeks.
People get cosmetic surgery on their jawbones?
Oh, yeah.
What for? Yeah. What do they want to do to it? Make it, like...
Usually they, like, shape it, don't they? They shape some of the bone down.
You can change the shape of your jaw. Yeah. So it's the maxilla is the part of the jawbone. Right. So, yeah. So surgery's on that. Studies in outpatient settings have found rates of 8 to 37% in patients with OCD, 11 to 13% in social phobia, 26% in trichotillomania. The one where you're picking and pulling. Yeah. 8% in major depression and 14 to 42% in atypical major depression. So what do you think we can kind of gather from those numbers there?
That it is comorbid with other mental health problems.
Yeah, exactly. Well, specifically things like social phobia and OCD and hair pulling and major depression. What we can also determine from this is that people with BDD, body dysmorphic disorder, are also overrepresented in dermatology, cosmetic surgery, and, you know, other kinds of cosmetic surgeries, you know, like jaw and face surgeries and, you know, orthodontistry, all of that sort of stuff. And this also kind of puts cosmetic surgery in a worrying light, because it means that they're giving surgeries to a lot of people who have, you know, a mental health problem that is specifically based around worrying around a part of your appearance, you know, a part of your appearance which is kind of insignificant to others. I mean, like, or something that isn't necessarily apparent to others. So worrying about some perceived blemish or deformity. And is cosmetic surgery necessarily the best outcome for that?
Very unlikely.
Well, because it's not fixing the underlying issue there, you know?
One question I would have about this is that I would imagine that if you have body dysmorphia about a specific part of your body, say, if you change that part of your body to sort of align with your what you think it should look like, I'd assume either it's not just going to go away, it would either then fixate on a different part of the body and then you've got to sort of chase it around forever, or it would just be like, oh, but it's still not perfect, it still could be smaller, or it could be smoother, or it could be better.
Cosmetic surgery could solve the problem for some people, but I don't have the studies in front of me on this. I don't have the data there. I mean, I would be inclined to kind of agree with you, to be perfectly honest. I mean, absolutely. I'm not necessarily against cosmetic surgery in general. I think that there are definite problems with it. I feel like we could be too quick to turn to it as a solution. Yeah. I feel like you should be allowed to do what you want with your body, ultimately, right?
Yeah.
And this is kind of similar to what we were talking about, I think, last week with vaping and smoking. You know, you should be allowed to do what you want to your body. I don't have an issue with people choosing what they do with their body. That's fine. I kind of have an issue with predatory systems that prey on and profit off of other people's insecurities and profit off of, you know,
their vulnerabilities.
Yeah, their vulnerabilities, you know, like, you know, like profiting off of addiction or profiting off of the fact that someone has a mental health problem that makes them, like, you know, obsess over an aspect of their appearance that, you know, is basically unnoticeable, you know?
But then again, I guess whose responsibility is it? If somebody comes to a cosmetic surgeon and says, I feel like my nose should be smaller, and there you go, I can do that for you, but ultimately, if it's like, well, actually, you don't think your nose could be smaller, what you really want to go away is this underlying thing, and we can refer you to this person, and then that works. Like, it's almost like you have to have, you have to have somebody who's like, you either have to go for a referral in order to get cosmetic surgery. You first have to be checked by a psychologist, which seems like an insane step to make.
It's what we do for trans people.
Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's what we do for trans people. And I'm not saying that's what we should do.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that I don't like some cosmetic surgeons. You know, there was something I saw recently of a TikTok of cosmetic surgeon looking at, who was it, some celebrity's face and being like, oh, well, the Nancy from Stranger Things, looking at that actor's face.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, I would change this, I would change that, this is what I would do, and then I'd pump this up. I don't like a lot of cosmetic surgeons. I don't respect what a lot of them do, really. I think that people should be allowed to get cosmetic surgery if they want. However, I feel like some people turn to cosmetic surgery maybe a bit too soon without looking into it. Like, there was other person I saw on TikTok who was like, you know, oh, I got this filler in my nose to fill out the thing in my nose. And also, like, apparently there are side effects, and they didn't know, they didn't research it very well. They didn't know that it was, they just went and got filler because it was easy to get filler, and they had an issue with the way their nose looked. And they were like, oh yeah. And they were talking about it on TikTok, promoting it to all of their followers. And then they found out that there could be potential side effects, and because the doctor had to tell them about the side effects before they could consent to the surgery, or the procedure rather. And this person just had they thought there were no potential side effects whatsoever. Which is like, or no potential complications, which is like,
that's not true of anything.
No, yeah, absolutely. And it's baffling to me that we're, and this person is like, I think was 20, just turned 21. So like, you know what I mean? Young.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, it's something that we should potentially keep an eye on, because a lot of people are making money out of insecurities, and that's not necessarily great, you know, no. Especially if it doesn't solve necessarily any of those underlying insecurities. And I'm just going to hop in before any straighters coming in from, you know, what is it? I think last week's episode or the week before come in to start chatting to me about how does this not apply to trans people? It doesn't apply to gender dysphoria is different than, you know, body dysmorphic disorder. They're not the same thing, because for one thing, we'll get into the explicit diagnostic criteria of body dysmorphic disorder, but gender dysphoria is not obsessing over something that is insignificant or slight or not apparent to others. It's quite clear what people with gender dysphoria are obsessing over, and it's not even obsession, you know what I mean, with gender dysphoria. It's just a discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Very different things. They're very different things, and if you're gonna try and claim that, then shut up, because you don't know what you're talking about. So back to body dysmorphic disorder. I've spoken a little bit about comorbidities, you know, major depressive disorder, which is just depression, by the way, OCD, social phobia, and hair pulling. But also, I want to point out that generalized anxiety disorder, bulimia, and substance abuse or dependence, all of those sorts of things are also like sort of not linked necessarily, but can be more common if you've got body dysmorphia. And it's also really apparently underdiagnosed. They did a sort of study looking at a couple studies looking at inpatients and also looking at sort of outpatients and depressed outpatients, and then essentially looked to see if they had body dysmorphia, and then also checked to see if they'd been diagnosed with body dysmorphia. And apparently all four studies found that body dysmorphia was missed by the clinician in every case in which it was present. Yeah, no, it could be an easy enough thing to miss, right? And I kind of want to talk about it across cultures as well, because, like, what effect do you think culture has on it? Do you think it's, like, a Western thing? Because this isn't something that we usually think about, how culture and country that you live in and all that sort of stuff influences or impacts mental health conditions.
Well, it's definitely not, I would be fairly certain to say that it's definitely not just a Western thing. I know that there is not necessarily body dysmorphia, but I know that there are countries not in the West, where people obsess over having sort of traditionally white traits, mm-hmm. and go and get specific surgeries in order to look more Western or, mm-hmm. or more white. Mm. Now, that may not be body dysmorphia. It may be another thing. I don't know, mm-hmm. where you draw the line there, but it's not got any utility. Like, there's no benefit, yeah. other than like if Western looks are, I suppose, revered in your culture because you're bombarded by our media, then maybe, yes, there will be some utility to looking like that because other people will like you or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But there's no actual reason why your nose should be that shape other than other people's pressure and culture. So I would say that probably not just Western, but I imagine it's more prevalent in the West and maybe more prevalent in sort of developed economies.
Well, actually, in developed economies, that probably makes a bit more sense. I don't actually have the numbers on that. And partly that's because, you know, a lot of the studies have been done in the US and, you know, other parts of the sort of Western world. So, I mean, if you look at the largest systematic sort of studies on body dysmorphia, apparently they're from the US, Italy, England, presumably the United Kingdom, right? And that's kind of shaped our knowledge on body dysmorphia. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is literally a quote from this paper that I read. Thus, reports from these countries have shaped much of our knowledge on BDD's clinical features. Mm. So, you know, it's when we talk about this, I want it just to be clear that a lot of what we're talking about applies to, not primarily to sort of Western areas, it does apply elsewhere as well, but some of the more specific aspects of it apply potentially more strongly in the West. And there are other areas of the world, you know, we've not done a lot of these studies in sort of Africa, we've not done a lot of these studies in Asia, there are other areas of the world where there could be slight differences. But the main thing to take away is that body dysmorphia is absolutely present across pretty much anywhere that we've looked. Apparently there haven't been many cross-cultural studies from this paper that I read. They only had found one that compared America and German, American and German students, and they found that there were similar rates in both the groups, 4% of Americans and 5.3% of Germans. And yeah, apparently there are, so I'm going to go through some things that are kind of similar. So there are cases in Japan that and I'm just going to read this here, from Japan that suggest that BDD's clinical features in that country are generally similar to those in other countries. However, concern with the eyelids and with causing others displeasure by appearing unattractive may be more common than in Western cultures. So it's interesting here, right? So you've got the same underlying issue of thinking, like, you know, obsessing over a perceived defect, right? But apparently in Japanese culture, where like causing disrespect to others is more of an issue than it is, say, in American culture or even British culture, where even we don't very much like, you know, causing an issue with others. But, you know, disrespecting others in Japan is a big sort of issue, you know, like culturally. There's more, I feel like there are more respectful kind of culture.
But the issue they mentioned was causing discomfort or disrespect to others by a feature of your, for example, eyelids.
So by being by being ugly, you're causing displeasure to others.
And that's like, that's, this is so from interesting culturally.
This is from a paper written by, I believe, an American, not written by someone from Japan, right?
Yeah.
Here, so, you know, take that.
Yes.
Take that
big,
as you will.
Big pictures of
grain of salt, you know. But yeah, there's also so there's something called Koro in Southeast Asia, apparently, and that is a preoccupation that the penis or labia, nipples or breasts are shrinking and retracting and will disappear into the abdomen, resulting in death.
What?
That's
where is this
in Southeast Asia? It's a culture related syndrome occurring primarily in Southeast Asia. Yeah. This won't happen, by the way. This is like a preoccupation.
What? I've never heard of this illness. It's happening to me.
So that could be something similar related to BDD. But let's go in a little bit more into the symptoms of body dysmorphia. So I'm just going to rattle through these. So symptoms include, and this is from the NHS, worrying a lot about a specific area of your body, particularly your face, spending a lot of time comparing your looks with other people's, looking at yourself in mirrors a lot or avoiding mirrors altogether, going to a lot of effort to conceal flaws by spending a lot of time combing your hair, applying makeup, choosing clothes, other such things, picking your skin to make it smooth. Body dysmorphic disorder can also seriously affect your daily life, including your work, social life, and relationships. It can also lead to depression, self-harm, and worse thoughts than that. So those are kind of like I guess symptoms, as in like how it might affect your life, not really the diagnostic criteria, you know? So let's just quickly run through those. So essentially, the diagnostic features here are, it says that you're sort of preoccupied with perceived defects or flaws in your physical appearance, essentially looking bad. You're worried about looking ugly or bad, monstrous even. It can literally go from sort of looking, oh, I don't look very good, to I'm hideous, disgusting monster. Like there is a spectrum of sort of, you know, how bad you can think you look. Yeah.
And is there any suggestion that like people with this are like, rather than like seeing themselves how they actually are, and then just sort of focusing more on small defects, and because they're focusing on them, they seem bigger. Is there any suggestion that they're actually sort of this? They're actually seeing this. They're sort of almost like that. This is the experience they're having when they look at themselves. They actually see something hideous and monstrous, like it's a hallucination. Because I feel like I don't know. I've never had a massive amount of conversations with somebody with something like, for example, anorexia. But from what I've heard people talk about and what I've read, they actually look at themselves and think they look big.
Yeah.
Right? They're not almost, it sounds like from that description, they're not actually seeing themselves correctly. Or either that, or they're focusing on like tiny aspects of like, oh, there's that very small amount of fat on my body there, and they're focusing like with laser focus on that little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know which one it is. Maybe a bit of both, maybe different for different people.
I'm not sure. I think apparently from what I'm reading here, just a quick cursory search, that you can be kind of delusional in your body dysmorphia, like potentially, but that's not a rule. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that absolutely could be the case. Mm. And the delineation between those two is incredibly slight, right? Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, if you're focusing, right? So, yeah. Yes. If you're focusing very heavily on something and therefore perceiving it as being sort of, you know, you're giving more weight to it in your perception than others are, how different is that from hallucinating, you know, that something is, something does look a certain way? I mean, there's a difference between, I would say, you know, like, oh, this small blemish on my face it makes me hideous, and this small blemish on my face makes me hideous, but actually the blemish isn't there for everyone else. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. What was that game? There was a game people used to play when I was at school where they'd like look at your eyebrows or something for like a minute, and then you'd like start looking really ugly. Like if you focus, I can't remember what the body part was. I think might have been eyebrows, where if you like stare at the eyebrows of somebody while they're talking, like your perception of them completely changes. I'm just staring at Corey's eyebrows.
I will always be sexy or smart. I will never be ugly, thank you.
I can't remember. I was trying to do it whilst you were talking. I was trying to think about it, and you didn't get ugly, so congratulations.
Thank you very
much. But, I don't know.
Mm. Eyebrows make sense, because they are just weird strips of hair.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's difficult. I'm going to be honest, I'm not totally sure here on that front, like how common like hallucinating is, or whether like being like actually delusional like that. I mean, I suppose it is delusional regardless, but whether or not it's sort of, I guess, would hallucination be sort of more psychotic? I'm not sure. But yeah, I'm not sure how prevalent that actually is. So,
and also maybe difficult to even be able to tell, because you can never tell what someone else is seeing.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing would be if sort of this blemish or this sort of defect was like fully just hallucinating, like it was non-existent, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In which case would that really be I don't know if that,
I guess
I'm not sure.
I imagine it as like, okay, when you look at yourself you feel really bad, and you're actually sort of seeing yourself, but you feel really bad about your look, and you focus on, oh, my nose looks like that, and my eyebrows are like that, or my chin looks like that, or whatever.
Yeah.
Versus when you look in the mirror you actually see an ugly, ugly face, and then if you then can get better, the way you look at yourself, you actually start to see yourself almost like it's a different face.
Yeah, but I feel like the difference between those things is so, like, that assumes almost that human perception is
objective.
Is objective.
When you're healthy, yeah, which is not.
Which is, yeah, and like, you know what I mean? Oh, I've started to see a better looking face and not the monstrous one I saw before. What is the difference between that and like hyper focusing on specific aspects and thinking those specific aspects are ugly, and therefore perceiving yourself to be ugly, and then not doing that anymore? Do you know what I mean? Like the difference between those two,
yeah,
between seeing something like monstrous and focusing on things so that you then perceive yourself to be monstrous.
Yeah. It's almost like, have you ever seen someone you know, you're like looking for someone you know, and you see them in the crowd or something, and but you don't recognize them straight away.
Mm.
And then you realize who they are, and their face almost like snaps into
your perception
of them. And you sort of, what that does to me is it makes me wonder like, oh, okay, so have I actually got like a model of their face, which I then sort of place on top of their face when I then recognize them. And what I was actually seeing before was what they actually look like, or at least another way of interpreting the visual data of the shape of their
looking face. At their features individually rather than perceive. Well, it's interesting because I find that often I will look at someone and say, oh, that person looks like that person. And the person I'm talking to will disagree. Like, they'll be like, no, they don't. And I'm like, okay, no. Okay, but if you look at these features, you know, like, oh yeah, this person has a kind of looking nose and their chin is similar. And then the person would be like, oh, I can kind of see what you're talking about, I guess. Yeah. It's not the same as someone looking, you know, a lot like someone else. This isn't like, you know, a Dan Radcliffe and what's his name? Hobbit Boy situation. Elijah Wood situation, right? Where they can be mistaken for each other, look similar. Or, you know, like Katy Perry and Zooey Deschanel, where they look really similar. Mm. Or was it Dylan Sprouse and Cole Sprouse, where they look really similar. It's not one of those situations. It's weird how close those guys. And they've got the same name too. The same surname. Yeah, crazy. So it's not one of those situations. It's where, oh, this person kind of looks like that. And you got to wonder, is that like... Am I picking out features and like you got to think of it like, am I picking out the features that I most associate with this person, and the person that I'm talking to has different features that they associate with that person, and so they don't see the similarity. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Or like the order in which your brain builds a model of a face is different. Like you start with the eyebrows, and somebody else starts with the cheekbones, and then everything else is from like it's like a different stack.
Yeah, because I mean there are parts of like you know people's faces that you just don't necessarily. Not recognize, but maybe don't pay much attention. Like knowing the colors of all your friends' eyes.
Yeah,
I don't know the colors of my friend's eyes.
What color Jam's eyes are, and he's right next to me. Green,
blue. I know both of your eyes are blue, but I don't know that from looking at you.
Mm.
I know that from just remembering that we've had the conversation of what color are your eyes.
Yeah,
I would honestly struggle to tell you what color color eyes my parents have. I know.
Yeah.
Like I know. Mm-hmm. But it's a remembering thing rather than like oh well yes they look
you
like...
also have aphantasias so
yeah true yeah
fair. You can't picture true. Their face with
not
their
true
eyes.
But I think that I mean and then how does that come into it as well like I think human perception is something that is so we think of perception as just objective like you know like almost as though you know I can't even find an analogy. Because there is no sort of objective
one-to-one taking image. We feel like we're looking through a window, but actually we're looking at a screen that's representing data from a camera in a way that the camera did not receive that data.
Exactly. Mm. I was thinking about a window, but I was like, even when you look through a window, though, it's being distorted by the glass slightly, and there's, you know what I mean, like different things. Like, we have no objective perception. We have none at all. We feel as though what we perceive is objective, which is presumably why one of the reasons why body dysmorphia is so difficult to deal with, because you see something, you're like, this is real. This is what I like. You perceive something, you're like, this is real. This is what I look like to everyone else. And we don't think about the fact that our perception can differ just so greatly from someone else. Like ultimately, humans are weird looking, right? You got gangly bits and like these like bloody things sticking out your face and what's this whole like,
ears
what's this
are
doing
so ugly.
Huh? You got like strips all of ears. Keratin just sticking out of your face and head and all over
on your eyebrow muscles. Why are they there?
So on top of like looking weird, voices are weird. Like we're just making like we're making weird noises. We're pushing air through like little bits in our throats, right, that make little vibrations, and that we all understand that, and it's very very strange. And sometimes it's very, very sexy. Like Idris Elba, his voice, I'm not going to lie.
Crisp. Mwah.
Emma Stone, great voice. You know, we got some great voices on this planet. And if we all listen to Luke, have a little talk right now.
Hello.
Say some more.
My name is Luke, and you're listening to my voice, and I hope you're finding it incredibly sexy.
It is a sexy voice.
Yeah, well, some people that just heard that thought, wow, that is the sexiest voice I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And other people thought,
wow, thanks. Thanks.
That's what they thought.
I'm going to keep talking just to spite you, you bitch.
Now, that's strange because they're both, where everyone's hearing the same voice, yeah, the but same they're like perceiving it differently.
Yeah. Right? Some are perceiving it wrong.
Thank you, Luke.
That's true.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
He's ringing again. Why is he ringing this time, Corey?
He's ringing for After Dark, Luke.
Why have we gendered our ad bell, Corey?
Because he's a boy and I want to respect him, just like I respect After Dark, our sister show to this podcast, SciGuys. After Dark is what happens after SciGuys ends. We just chat about whatever we want to chat about.
If you've ever been listening to SciGuys and gone, God, I wish there were less facts, then you can listen to After Dark. I wish there were more opinions in this show.
More philosophy and politics.
Yes, After Dark is the show where Corey and I sit down, and maybe with a guest sometimes, sit down and discuss just more sort of floaty, woo-woo-y ideas about things we think with our brains.
And where can they watch this wonderful, wonderful show, Luke?
Well, they can listen to it and watch it at patreon.com/SciGuys. SciGuys, our Patreon, where you can also support us and help us keep doing this thing that you apparently like us doing.
Did you say patreon.com/SciGuys?
Yes, I think I did. I think I did say patreon.com/SciGuys.
Well, if you want to listen to After Dark, it seems like you should get to patreon.com/SciGuys.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's patreon.com/SciGuys in case you weren't paying attention.
Now pay attention because we're about to start the show.
Oh, my attention has been paid and will continue to be paid until the end when I go home.
We've spoken about the sort of symptoms and we started talking about the diagnosis, you know, and this is it. Like there are sort of there's a preoccupation with perceived defects, right? And either the perceived defects are just not observable, or they're very, very slight, yeah. Right? And so there you go. That would, I guess, that's sort of the difference between sort of being the
hallucination,
like the hallucination, that sort of
fixation.
Yeah, the fixation. Yeah, but they're, I mean, it's so, so similar. Mm. The difference between that is like, it's very close, I think, you know? And usually those preoccupations will focus on, you know, the skin, like acne, scars, lines, wrinkles, paleness, or the hair thinning, or excessive body or facial hair, you know, thinning hair on your head or excessive body or facial hair, or the size or shape of your nose. But like, it can be anything. Like you could be your teeth, anything, you know, your fingers, like any part of your body. You could think, like, I'm thinking about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and there is a character called Uncle Jack who has an incredible preoccupation with the size of his hands. He thinks his hands are very, very small. They're normal-sized hands. And actually, if I'm thinking about it, I just realized that that show has two strangely, like, strangely somewhat accurate representations of, like, OCD and body dysmorphia. Obviously, like, elevated to the point of, like, absolute comedy. Like, they're just, it's very ridiculous. But the representations would probably, that those characters would probably be diagnosed, right? Yeah. Whereas most characters that are said to have those conditions in TV shows, like, don't actually fit the diagnostic criteria or whatever. They're just based on, like
Monica from Friends.
Yeah, exactly. But the interesting thing about these characters is that it's not spoken about in the show as being this. It's just, like, works of the characters that you can apply that to. It's just interesting. So on top of this sort of, like, this sort of thinking that you look a certain way when that's not sort of perceivable or observable to others, there's also the preoccupation, which can be intrusive. The preoccupations are intrusive, they're unwanted, they are time consuming. You're seeing why this is sort of listed with OCD, because this is pretty much the exact same thing as OCD, you know, spending a lot of time not wanting to do it. It's not enjoyable and it's usually difficult to resist or control, and they occur usually on average from about 3 to 8 hours per day. Now the limit for OCD, for your sort of like preoccupations with OCD, is an hour. This happens from about 3 to 8 hours a day. Yeah, and so the repetitive behaviors or mental acts, you could be, like I said, you could be looking in the mirror or like picking at your skin or fixing flaws or anything like that sort of thing, like putting on excess, like you could put on excess makeup all the time. You could compulsively shop, you know, for beauty products or clothes or things, or excessively exercising to build muscle or to lose weight, because people think about body dysmorphia as just being women who think they're ugly. But no, It could absolutely be those big gym bros who can just never get big enough because they think they look too small.
Yeah.
It can affect anyone, and it affects men and women pretty much equally. Like, it's pretty similar in how it affects men and women. You know, you talk about muscle dysphoria, which happens mostly in men. It's the preoccupation of, like, you know, the idea that, oh, I'm too small and scrawny and skinny and I gotta get big. You see guys that are like, you could be the size of their rock and still think that you're a skinny twig, you know, if you've got that.
What are the rest of us then?
Exactly, right? And, but it could, well, this is the thing, because it doesn't apply to others. Yes, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like you can do really dangerous things, specifically with this sort of like this muscle one, where you're going to the gym, you're trying to build muscle, and you're like, you can't get big enough, you take steroids, or you cut your food intake to being really low, and like your protein intake being really high, and you can be malnourished and all of these things because you're just trying to build muscle and lean mass. Like, it could be super dangerous, you know, and it could lead to eating disorders, or it could lead to situations like this with steroid use and all of that sort of stuff. The diagnostic criteria I find are kind of interesting. I'm just going to read these verbatim. So, A, preoccupation with one or more perceived defects or flaws in physical appearance that are not observable or appear slight to others. B, at some point during the course of the disorder, the individual has performed repetitive behaviors, mirror checking, excessive grooming, skin picking, reassurance seeking, or mental acts, comparing their appearance with that of others in response to the appearance concerns. C, the preoccupation causes clinically significant distress or impairment in social, occupational, or other important areas of functioning. D, the appearance preoccupation is not better explained by concerns with body fat or weight in an individual whose symptoms meet the diagnostic criteria for an eating disorder. Specify if, with muscle dysmorphia, the individual is preoccupied with the idea that their body is too small or insufficiently muscular. This specifier is used even if the individual is preoccupied with other body areas, which is often the case. And then specify if, indicate degree of insight regarding body dysmorphic disorder beliefs, for example, I look ugly or I look deformed. With good or fair insight, the individual recognizes that the body dysmorphic disorder beliefs are definitely or probably not true, or they may or may not be true. With poor insight, the individual thinks that the body dysmorphic disorder beliefs are probably true. With absent insight or delusional beliefs, the individual is completely convinced that the body dysmorphic beliefs are true. So what those specify ifs are, it's sort of like, okay, so you've got, we've got through the diagnostic criteria of body dysmorphic disorder, you match those. Now, is this sort of muscle dysmorphia, like, are you preoccupied with your body build? If so, then well, that's muscle dysmorphia. And then you want to sort of specify as well whether, like, what the kind of insight level is, whether you're aware that you're kind of like these these sort of concerns that you've got, these I guess preoccupations, are whether you're like aware that they are because of body dysmorphia, whether like, you know, you're like, they're not true, or whether you're like, oh, I feel like they might not be true but I'm not sure, or whether you're like, they are absolutely true. Because obviously those are like three different experiences, right? Whether you actually believe the things that you're thinking, or whether you're aware that they are happening because of, you know, a mental illness, right? And, you know, there are other sort of associated features like social avoidance, depressed mood, neuroticism, perfectionism, low self-esteem, low extroversion. Like, you can like isolate yourself because you feel like you look monstrous, you know? And it's also been associated with executive dysfunction and visual processing abnormalities, with a bias for analyzing and encoding details rather than holistic or configural aspects of visual stimuli. What that means is, instead of like looking at the whole, you look at like individual parts. Mm-hmm. And apparently, people with body dysmorphia can tend to have a bias for negative and threatening interpretations of facial expressions and ambiguous scenarios. So they kind of run tests on you and like see, oh, how do you perceive this? And it's like a neutral facial expression. And yeah.
That would suggest what we were talking about earlier could be true about how the part about not looking at holistic perception and just looking at individual perception sort of suggests that the focus is on they got hyper focus on a small defect, mm-hmm. or that kind of thing. But then also the interpretations of being more negative, mm-hmm. could be sort of, that's almost towards a hallucination end, where you are perceiving, because when you perceive something to be negative, you have seen it to be negative. You've just, you know, slightly misinterpreted it, and your brain has sort of shown you that. Right. Mm-hmm. And well, so, yeah, there's a little bit of both in there.
I feel like, I don't know if there's a little bit of both. I feel like perceiving sort of facial expressions to be negative, that's not necessarily like always a sort of hallucination sort of delusion thing. It could just like, you could just have such a negative outlook, you know what I mean, that you perceive something that is neutral automatically as negative. Do you know what I mean? Rather than seeing something that's neutral as neutral, you see neutral as negative and positive positive as maybe less negative, verging towards positive.
Yes,
do you know what
absolutely,
I mean?
Yeah.
Rather than like look at a neutral face and then sort of hallucinating that it actually looks.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. The difference between perception is a hell of a thing.
Because ultimately it's all signals coming from your brain.
Yeah.
Some of them are visual signals and some of them are emotional signals and some of them are thought signals.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just the question of whether you get the thought that that was a negative thing and whether the signal from your visual signal, the sort of image you see, is actually distorted by the thought or by the emotion. And, you know, I don't know the answer to that. But all I mean to bring up there is that what I found interesting is that there is specific research about how you are categorizing and how you are focusing on different inputs. Like you're focusing on individual things rather than holistic things, and you're focusing on more negative interpretations of stimuli over positive interpretations or neutral interpretations.
No, I get you. So we've gone through the diagnostic criteria for body dysmorphic disorder. We've got a better understanding of it now, I would hope.
Oh, yeah, right? I would say so.
We kind of had a little touch on the associated features, like, you know, low self-esteem, ashamed of your appearance, excessive focus on how you look, reluctant to reveal their concerns to others, all of that sort of stuff. But also, and I've mentioned the executive dysfunction that could be related to body dysmorphic disorder and sort of processing abnormalities, seeing neutral faces being more negative, things like that. We've spoken about a bit about comorbidities, but just to run through them quickly again, major depressive disorders, so depression, OCD, substance abuse disorders, anxiety, social anxiety disorder as well. We've mentioned all of that, you know, that could be comorbid with it. And how it develops is kind of interesting. It's kind of how you'd expect, to be honest. The mean average age, so that's like, you know, if you add them all up and then divide by however many you've got, the one that you think of when I say average. Mm. So the mean age at disorder onset is 16 to 17 years, and the median age at onset is 15 years. Anyone know what the median is?
Get all of them, line them up, pick the middle one.
Exactly, yeah. And the most common age at onset is 12 to 13 years, otherwise known as?
Oh, puberty.
The mode.
Oh, the most.
Yeah, mean, median, mode. Yeah. So it's 12 to 13 is puberty also, yeah.
The mean, the median, and
that's
the puberty.
That's a good observation, yeah.
Which one's the mode again? What is the mode?
The mode is the most... Is it the most commonly?
Most common, yeah.
The most common.
Ah.
So subclinical symptoms, so as in symptoms that don't meet sort of the diagnostic criteria, I believe, usually start to begin for about 12 to 13 years old, and then they just kind of gradually grow until you've got the full-blown disorder. But also there's other people that can have just it happen abruptly, just like boom, I have this now sort of thing. And it's really interesting because it's the sort of clinical features that supposedly I'm reading here, the disorder's clinical features appear largely similar in children and adolescents and adults, and we don't know much about how it affects the elderly because you just don't pay attention to them when it comes to body dysmorphia. Yeah, we've not really looked into it. There's not a huge amount of research on it. We need to do more research on that. And yeah, I mean, like, you can be more likely if you get it sort of before 18, you're more likely to have comorbidities and gradual onset rather than sort of acute, like sort of short term or all at once sort of thing, rather than those that have adult onset body dysmorphia disorder. So if you have it as an adult, it seems to be like easier to sort of deal with and get over. Whereas if you like have it for longer, that can sort of have worse outcomes for you. You know what I mean? Mm. And when we talk about the causes, we don't really know what causes body dysmorphia, but genetics, a chemical imbalance, traumatic experiences, those could all, you know, potentially be factors. You know, the NHS is saying that you might be more likely to develop body dysmorphic disorder if you have a relative with BDD, obsessive compulsive disorder, or depression. Also, you're more likely to develop body dysmorphia if you were teased or bullied or abused when you were a child, you know, so that sort of traumatic experience there. Yeah, I mean, there are other risk factors, so childhood neglect and abuse, again, if you've got a relative with it, that's another risk factor, all of these sorts of things. And as I said, it happens internationally. Like, it's not just a Western thing, as some people might sort of consider it. Anyway, I mean, even I would say potentially probably Korea is a place where it's probably quite prevalent, because we know Korea has like high rates of cosmetic surgery. So I think it'd actually be pretty interesting to look at the rates of cosmetic surgery and then also the rates of body dysmorphic disorder and see if those correlate at all. You know, and then also potentially look at advertising and the media and seeing what kinds of people are being sort of celebrated or pushed and how others are viewed, you know? Because, I mean, if you think about it, what is the stereotype for, I don't know, evil character? Witches. Well, what do
hooked
witches look
nose.
Like? Yeah, hooked nose. Not very nice. Have you got a hooked nose?
No.
Warts. No. Not very nice. Have you got warts, right? No. Like you're seen it's or scars, like facial scars. Like, I mean, there's not
you
a thing.
Must have an evil past, yeah. Surely.
Or an evil present, at least.
Or an evil present.
Yeah. No, exactly. Look at this gift I got for you.
Evil. I never noticed your hooked nose.
I think, was there not something relatively recently, some, I think, film company or some group decided to stop allowing evil characters to have scars, and or they wanted more good characters to have facial scars, because facial scars are so commonly associated with an evil character.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, think about like Kylo Ren, right off the top of my head. You've got that the
every
ones
James
from,
Bond villain.
Yeah, the ones from James Bond. Yeah. I mean, gosh, like facial scars are just like seen as like an evil thing. Dr. Doom's entire bloody thing is having a facial scar that he hides, you know? And actually he could have body dysmorphia because he obsesses over it so much that he's got this little scar and he hides his face in a big metal mask. Dr. Doom's the bad guy from the Fantastic Four.
Captain Hook. Got an eye patch.
And a hooked.
He's got a hook.
And a hook. Sorry, yeah.
We're talking about scars,
does
man.
He even have an eye patch? We're talking I don't
about,
think he does.
We're talking no, about
he
scars.
He has a, okay, he has a hook. Fine.
Suppose his hand may be scarred from...
Yeah. Under that hook.
Under that hook.
It's a little scarred stamp.
We also talk about body dysmorphia as being like super common in women, like very prevalent in women. But apparently, you know, females and males have more similarities than differences, and that's the same across different cultures. The different cultures have more similarities than differences when it comes to body dysmorphic disorder. I mean, one of the main differences is that men are more likely to have genital preoccupations, and women are more likely to have a comorbid eating disorder. And muscle dysmorphia is pretty much exclusive to males, not entirely, but more or less. You know, like
it's, women will probably have higher rates of anorexia.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah exactly. See, this is. I wonder what's going on there.
Is it possibly be blamed?
Cultural pressures, perhaps? And let's talk quickly about the effects of it, because, you know, you don't necessarily consider, oh, what effect does obsessing over this have on your life? Well, you can have impaired psychosocial functioning, for one thing, because, you know, you can avoid social situations, or you could be completely housebound because you're just obsessed over, like, how this looks like. Like, think about this, right? Think if one day you woke up and your face suddenly looked like very, very different, and you thought it looked like monstrous. Like, imagine one day you woke up and you turned into like, I don't know, like Shrek or something, or like, you, like something that you think is like particularly hideous.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to go outside, right? I mean, even if it didn't just happen all of a sudden, if you like were sort of looking in the mirror and seeing yourself as looking like just hideous, you would not want to go outside. So it makes sense that, you know, it has that effect. And on top of that, you know, you can like have, it can affect your job, your school work, your sort of life, your sort of, if you're a parent, it can affect your ability to be a caregiver. And it's...
It'll affect your finances as well.
Yeah.
You'll be spending a lot of money on, might spend money on products, you might spend money on cosmetic surgery.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And
it'll affect your confidence levels, might affect your promotions.
And affect the jobs that you're willing or able to take, you know? And This is a stat that kind of blew me away. About 20% of youths with body dysmorphic disorder report dropping out of school primarily because of their body dysmorphic disorder symptoms.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's just, it's insane. It's like, it can be...
Hang on a second. Sorry, can I just clarify that?
Yeah.
That 20% of people with body dysmorphia who are at school report that they drop out of school primarily because of their body dysmorphia, or 20% of people with body dysmorphia who drop out of school?
No. 20% of youths with body dysmorphic disorder report dropping
out
of school.
Insane.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Insane. Right. Insane. Those numbers. And obviously there is treatment. I'd like to kind of bring it back with the treatment. You know, the symptoms can get better with treatment. There are two main things that you can get on the NHS. There's CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is kind of talking therapy. It's essentially, we'll go into it a little bit more in a second. There's also SSRIs, or antidepressants, essentially. Now, if they're sort of moderate, if they're sort of mild to sort of moderate symptoms, or milder symptoms, you just have CBT, right? Yeah. More moderate symptoms, you'll get sort of an antidepressant. That's when those will start being sort of introduced. And then If they're really like severe symptoms, you'll get both. You know, you'll right. be like, okay, we need to give you both. Yeah. And if it doesn't work, then you kind of can, I think you can get sent to a sort of different kind of therapy or like mental health specialists, you know, as sort of not a last resort, but like, okay, none of this has worked. Well, let's send you to sort of mental health specialist that, and we can deal with you there, see how we can help you in that way. But with DBT, it's actually kind of interesting. So they use a technique called exposure and response prevention, which essentially is just, it's kind of like exposure therapy, but it's just kind of gradually putting you into situations that would normally sort of trigger you, essentially. And part of CBT is sort of finding out what your triggers are, and trying to help you deal with different, like, trying to help you come up with different ways of approaching that and dealing with it, right? You know, and yeah, as I said, part of that is sort of triggering you just a little bit and then slowly increasing until you're able to deal with sort of full-on triggers a lot better. And, you know, obviously you'll be helped, there will be other sort of other parts to that as well. But usually for kids, this is interesting, CBT for children and young people usually also involve their family members or carers. And when it comes to SSRIs, which is selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, usually just used for depression, antidepressants, fluoxetine is the one that's most commonly used for body dysmorphic disorder. They might put you onto another one if it doesn't work, but that is the one that is most commonly used. Apparently, it could take up to 12 weeks before it has an effect on your symptoms, which is pretty standard with SSRIs. They take a sort of while to build up. And if it works, you'll take them for a few months to sort of improve your symptoms before you start to sort of wean yourself off of them. And that's kind of generally body dysmorphic disorder. I kind of have a few things that I want to talk about, though. Hmm. I mean, sure, you probably have a few things you want to talk Good. About as well. I mean, my main thing is the misunderstanding of body dysmorphic disorder, of body dysmorphia, right? Because I feel like I see so many tweets of people being like, my body dysmorphia going off, or TikToks like, oh, my body dysmorphia. And they don't have body dysmorphia. They just don't like how they look.
Yeah.
Or they perceive themselves differently, sort of on different days because of how their self-image is. And, you know, they just don't like how they look. And not liking how you look is kind of a normal-ish thing, right? A lot of people don't like how they look. And that's not to say that, you know, it's perfectly fine to not like how you look and you should just shut up and deal with it. But be clear in what you're talking about, because you don't have body dysmorphia just because you don't like how you look. If you're not obsessing for hours on end a day, if it's not significantly impacting your, you know, your work, your social and your sort of educational life, like all of those different aspects of your life, then like you don't have body dysmorphia. In the same sense that if you find it difficult to pay attention every now and then, or you get distracted every now and then, you don't have ADHD. That's not how it works. If it's not significantly impacting your life, and if you're not obsessing over it, for hours on end, and you know, doing all of these other sorts of things that people do, like sort of like mentally, like a mental sort of preoccupation, or buying excess makeup, or buying a ton of clothes, or you know, hitting the gym constantly to make yourself look different, even though you can't see any real sort of change. Like, if you're not doing that sort of stuff, then you're not going to get diagnosed with body dysmorphia. And it's not fair to people that have body dysmorphia. 20% of the kids that have it, as we've said, drop out of school. It's not fair to those people to say, I have body dysmorphia, when you just don't like how you look.
The only thing I think feels fair to say on that, though, is that I think that although, yes, they don't have body dysmorphia, and it is an incorrect use of the word, I think it is helpful to have concepts like that. If you feel bad about the way you look, or you feel you can't focus, it is, to a certain extent, helpful to have phrases like that in order to go, and if you don't like the way you look, using the word body dysmorphia in that sort of colloquial sense is sort of a way of thinking that goes, okay, this is my perception, it's not necessarily true. And if I'm feeling lazy, if I'm feeling like it's not that I am lazy, it's that I have a motivation issue today, I'm not feeling very motivated, rather than just I'm lazy, I'm a slob, I'm stupid.
Well, that is fine. And I think it kind of works with like depression and depressed, right? So if someone says, a lot of people that have depression, well, not a lot, some people that have depression don't like when people say, oh, I'm depressed. And I understand that to some degree, because it can feel invalidating of your own sort of struggles. Interestingly, like when we in conversation, you know, we can say, oh yeah, I'm feeling really depressed today, because depression is kind of like, it is a feeling that one can have, right?
Yeah.
And so we can say, oh, I'm feeling depressed today, and that's fine. Whereas if someone says, I am depressed, that's kind of a different vibe from saying, I'm feeling depressed.
I have depression today.
So there's kind of different things there. And the thing is that there are phrases to describe this. Oh yeah, I have a really sort of warped self-image, you know? Like my self-esteem is like, I've got really low self-esteem today, and like my self-image is like all over the place, you know? You could say that. I'm having attentional issues today. Like I'm having motivational issues today, or yeah, I've really got issues with motivation. In the same sense that you wouldn't say I've got an eating disorder because you had no appetite for, like, I'm not going to lie. Like
yeah.
The other week, I can't remember what was going on. Look, this is it. Look, that's it. But the other week, I had a few days where I was feeling like I didn't have much of an appetite. I didn't know why. I didn't really know what was going on with me. But all I knew was that I was finding it difficult to eat and I didn't really want to because I wasn't really enjoying it very much. And so I was finding myself like avoiding it because I wasn't, you know, like I didn't have a huge appetite. And so when I did eat, I was like, this is a chore. So I was I wasn't eating very much, and that was only like for a few days or whatever, and I'm fine, you know, whatever. I'm good. Don't worry about me. But I wouldn't have been like, oh yeah, my anorexia today is just going off.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's so bad today. Whoa, oh me, I'm so quirky. It's not just that. I understand that people need words to describe what they're going through. The words are there. I just feel like people like to, or people feel a need to sort of in some cases exaggerate or be like, this is how bad it is. Like use the sort of thing to
validate this themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think another aspect of it as well, which is a totally like sort of a totally sort of innocent sort of thing in this sort of ignorance, is that they just don't know what body dysmorphia means.
Absolutely insanely intense it can be.
Because I genuinely, just from like osmosis, really, cultural osmosis, I just assumed that body dysmorphia was having a warped self-image.
Yeah.
I just thought that's what it was.
Yeah, sure.
But it's not.
As
it's OCD, really, kind
it
of.
It has to affect your daily life all the time to an extreme degree, yeah.
But not just that. Yeah, I mean, yes, that, but I think for me, the real defining factor between body dysmorphic disorder and sort of just having a warped self-image is that you spend hours obsessing. Yeah, it's like and not even the length of time that one spends obsessing, just the fact that there is this obsession, right?
Yeah,
because like you can I perceive myself differently every now and then when I look in the mirror. I can look in the mirror one day and be like, wow, looking twit and then, you know, I'm feeling a bit low, and then the next day I'm like feeling down myself, and I look in the mirror like, you know, a couple days later, and I'm like,
oh.
You disgust me. I hope you burn in a fire. You know what I mean?
Why do you go outside?
Exactly. And I look at, like, you know what I mean? And that's just a couple days difference. So I'm not going to change in my looks that much. But like, I feel like your self-image can be affected by, you know, how you feel, like your self-esteem, how you're feeling about yourself. And look, maybe there's something like real wrong with me that's got me like looking at myself and being like, oh, I feel differently about how I look, you know, based
on dysmorphia popping off.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Maybe I'm the weird one, but I feel like feeling differently about how you look on different days is a fairly normal thing.
Having your mood fluctuate sometimes is a fairly normal thing. And then having your mood affect how you feel about yourself is a fairly normal thing.
Yeah, exactly. And
fairly normal things.
I just feel like if you're not daily sort of spending, like, you know, lots of time just obsessing over a specific feature, it would be hard to make a case for saying you've got body dysmorphia. And I understand wanting to, like, not understanding that and, you know, being like, oh my gosh, why, I was saying the wrong thing. That's totally fine. It's totally fine to say the wrong thing. Like, it's cool. You know now. You don't do it. And if you see others doing it, be like, hey, look, that's not what body dysmorphia is. I just think that this sort of thing leads to a misunderstanding of what these things are. ADHD is seen as like, what? Oh, sorry, I got distracted.
But
that's not what it is. Like, I got diagnosed with ADHD and it messed up my life, not the diagnosis, the ADHD.
As soon as you...
From that point on, everything got worse.
Gavel.
Like, for one of the things...
ADHD entered your body.
Like, genuinely, like, one of the things that... the doctor said I had ADHD and suddenly everything fell apart. No, one of the things I mentioned was that I've been doing this podcast for about, 3.5 years at this point, and I can count on, like, both hands, probably, the number of times I've had an episode, I can count on one hand the number of times I've had an episode finished like more than a day in advance.
Yeah.
If we're talking like, I just can't do it until there's that time pressure. And that's just one of the things. Think about just that aspect of not being able to do something that you do weekly until like the day before you need to do it, the day that you need to get it done. Think of that, but then apply that to literally every single thing in your life. And not just everything like going to school, going to meet your friends, brushing your teeth. I have a toothbrush.
You do.
And some toothpaste.
And some toothpaste. You know why I've got this in the studio? It's because I need to have it here so that I can remember to brush my teeth before I film, or that if I'm working up here for hours on end because I've got caught on some work, I can still like have somewhat okay personal hygiene. I have phone chargers in every room of my house so I don't have to pick it up and like put it somewhere and lose it.
That's smart.
I have hooks for my keys so I don't lose them. I have specific pockets for my phone so I don't lose it. I have multiple deodorants, like literally every single place I might need to use deodorant so I don't misplace it.
I actually have that as well. Yeah,
right? It's really useful.
I'm by my bed because I always go to bed and Rebecca goes, "You put deodorant on?" I'm like, I don't want to get out of bed.
Bed, bathroom, gym bag, studio for some reason. There's one in a drawer over there. I don't know why. But you know what I mean? Like, and that's just me, right? That's just me with ADHD. Think about if someone has body dysmorphia and they hear, you know, some 16-year-old TikTok being like, "Oh, my body dysmorphia is so bad." Or like, you know, if you think that you look bad one day and then you don't think you look bad and like, you know, a few days later, you've got body dysmorphia. If someone is like watching their life implode before their eyes because they feel that they look hideous, seeing someone say, "I look bad today," and that's dysmorphic, like that's not a very nice thing, you know? And it makes it harder to talk about your experiences, because if I was to be like, it's one of those things where, you know, you talk about depression, you talk about being depressed, you talk about mental illness, and someone would be like, "Oh man, yeah, I was so depressed," you know? And you're like, "Oh, well, like, why?" "Oh, well, you know,
it's a very normal thing to be sad about."
Happening. Yeah, like my dog died and I had to take a day off work, you know? Yeah. I felt sad for a couple of weeks, and it's like,
damn.
No.
How'd you survive?
Your dog died.
Your dog doesn't know that you felt sad about what?
The word is grief.
I wake up and I'm thinking, man, being alive sucks, doesn't it? Like, these are not the same sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? And that's not to invalidate any of these experiences. They're all perfectly valid. And I'm not saying this one is worse than the other one and it's so much harder to deal with and that makes me better or that makes me blah, blah, blah. All I'm saying is that since our experiences differ so wildly, it makes sense to be able to use sort of these sort of differing terms for them, right? Mm-hmm. If you sort of appropriate like terms like body dysmorphia or OCD, you're making things more difficult for people that have to deal with those sort of conditions. And I just find that like a really difficult thing to... I find that a really difficult thing to see people do. I find that a really, like, and it's a difficult problem to deal with as well, because a lot of it comes down to education, right? People don't know what body dysmorphia is and they learn what it is through the internet in the same way that people learn what, you know, emotional labor means on the internet, or they learn what gaslighting means. And so if you've been gaslit and then suddenly you see every single person saying this celebrity gaslit their fans because they lied, or like, this company is gaslighting us. No, they're just ignoring your concerns because they're a company and they care about profits. Like, we dilute language in some ways. And I know that language is malleable and I know language changes and all of that sort of stuff. And I'm generally kind of okay with that. You know, like I understand that and that's cool and that's fine. And there's not much you could do about it. But when it comes to, I guess, things like this, like actual conditions like depression and body dysmorphia or OCD, all of these sorts of things, I feel like these are things that we should try to avoid diluting in that way. You know what I mean? Because then we're just gonna have to come up with another term for this and it's not gonna... It's a constant game of sort of playing catch up, you know? Mm. And then also when it comes to cosmetic surgery, it's difficult, right? Because people should be allowed to do what they want with their bodies.
Yeah.
But then also it's hard to take away from the fact that people are making changes to their bodies because of a really strong cultural influence in some cases. And because of a, like sort of almost predatory cosmetic surgeons, right? And I guess in general that's fine. I'm not saying, oh, you should absolutely stop it. People shouldn't get cosmetic surgeries. We should put in place like barriers to make sure that people, blah, blah, blah. If people are healthy and happy, that's absolutely fine. But I think we should maybe address the problems that lead to this, right? You know, because there are very obvious problems that lead to poor self-image, like the way that young girls read magazines that make them feel bad about themselves and give them eating disorders and stuff like that's do girls read magazines anymore? No, they're all on the internet. Oh, when I was
Twitter exists.
Yeah, when I was growing up, look, it was magazines, right? That's what was messing up girls. Instagram. Yeah, now it's Instagram.
Instagram. Yeah.
Oh, how times change, right? But look, cosmetic surgery, in general, like people can do what they want with their bodies. I have a personal kind of just like this feels a little predatory to me, and that's my issue with it. You know, but you know, if you want to add horns into your bloody skull or you know like you know whatever, I don't care, go for it, you do you, that's good. If you want to like you know change your nose so you fit more into a cultural beauty standard that has been forced on you from birth, and you know you've been told that your worth as a human being is like absolutely tied to your appearance and adherence to these standards of beauty, that's something that I'm less kind of, I'm just like, go ahead and do it. Like, absolutely go ahead and make yourself happy. Do what you want with your body. It's your body. You can make your choices. But when those choices are so strongly influenced by an outside force that benefits so greatly from making you feel that way, that's when I start to think, well, you do you. But in the meantime, let's figure out what this outside force is doing and try and get in its way. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, it's like there's a whole thing about bodily autonomy, but also like you can believe in bodily autonomy whilst also believing that maybe we shouldn't make people feel horrible about themselves to the point of wanting to physically change it.
But how will we sell them things they don't need?
Make good things.
But
that people
what if you are not good at making good things, but yet you want to sell things?
Well, Luke, I suppose you just have to indoctrinate an entire culture into believing that only a very narrow set of standards make one beautiful, and that being beautiful means you are good, and everyone should
that's
like
true.
You.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
thank
true.
You for the instructions. I'll get right on it.
Oh, no! But yeah, no, that is body dysmorphia, and you know, a few of my thoughts as well. You got anything else you all want to add?
The quick fire quiz.
Okay, let's do a quick fire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun.
Body dysmorphia edition.
The rules for the quick fire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finish asking the question wins. What do they win, Jemp?
Nothing.
Gosh darn right. Yeah. My question for you is, Luke, what is your buzzer?
Money.
And Jemp, what is your buzzer? Very good. And the quickfire quiz question is as follows. I'm about to say it right now. Make sure you're listening out for the question. What percentage of youths with body dysmorphia reported dropping out of school because of their body dysmorphia? Luke, you're the first one to buzz in after I finished asking the question. What is your answer?
20%.
You're gosh darn right. Yay. Here is your nothing.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh,
nothing.
Oh, nothing.
Congratulations.
One dysmorphia.
And with that, I think it's about time to go. But before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to exec producers Donito and Glitterabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. You can follow me at NotCor everywhere.
Stop. You can follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
Cut. You can follow me at Luke Cutfold everywhere.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Stop.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.